How's it going in Fayetteville tonight, Jordan?
It's going great, Miles. It's been a great day.
All right, let's get this thing started. So, we definitely chose the perfect week to begin this podcast. We've got plenty of material to go over. First off, we have to start with, what else? Oklahoma State versus Central Michigan. Now, we'll get to the controversial ending a little bit later, but first, let's just talk about the game itself. There were many glaring issues the Cowboys had. First off, Mason Rudolph just wasn't himself, although his stat line doesn't really show that he did terrible. He went 27-43, 286 yards, two touchdowns, and one interception. He was just overthrowing receivers the entire time. He didn't look like his normal self. The one interception he had was an awful pass into the end zone. He was trying to throw the fade to Washington. It didn't get there. He just looked off throughout the day. Another telling stat from the game, OSU 1 of 11 on third downs, which is just pitiful.
So the worst part of the whole thing is that Central Michigan and Oklahoma State combined for 107 yards rushing. 107 yards.
The most frustrating thing from an OSU fan's perspective, here's the problem. So it seemed after a year of 2 years of frustration with the run game stalling and sputtering, it felt like the Cowboys finally found their go-to guys with Justice Hill and Chris Carson. Throughout the game, they amassed 58 yards on 4.5 yards per carry. Justice Hill, he was averaging over 6 yards per carry. That's a true freshman. So it was a very impressive outing. And then late in the game, Yursich just decided not to go with him. He kept trying to force it through Rudolph, and who was just not having a good game.
Now, I can see where you blame Yursich, but the real blame has got to go on Greg Adkins, offensive line coach for Oklahoma State. He's had the job for 2 years. Neither year has he produced anything out of the two running backs. One, a JUCO All-American, another five-star running back out of high school. So it's hard to put the blame on Yursich whenever the offensive line isn't carrying their load.
Yeah, I agree. Greg Adkins has to shoulder a lot of the blame for the offensive line problems recently. And even though we were running the ball well, we took a step backward in the pass protection, and Rudolph was sacked 4 times. And so I'm just going off of just running backs only for rushing yards. But I think it was an abysmal 1.2 yards per carry if you factor in all of Rudolph's sacks.
Yeah, Rudolph was sacked, and he amassed negative 19 yards throughout the game. The offensive line is not doing him any favors. He has barely any time to get any balls down the field. That's why he seems to be overthrowing it. He doesn't have a good pocket to throw from. It's collapsing in on him at all times.
Yeah, the offense was just not where it needed to be on Saturday. It went. We jumped out to the 14-0 lead, and we didn't score again until we went ahead 27-24. Didn't score a touchdown. Until late in the game, we went ahead 27-24, which is just inexcusable to go 2.5 quarters without scoring a touchdown with the weapons we have and the talent we have on offense.
And Miles, let's talk about that point in the game. You were there, 27-24. Mason Rudolph throws a beautifully designed play out of bounds. What are your thoughts at that moment?
That was exactly what I was calling to do. So once we got that first down on that drive, I was looking up and I was doing the math, and I realized, you know, even if we run the clock down, we're going to have 4 or 5 seconds left. And then I simply thought back to the play 2 years ago whenever OSU was facing off against Florida State to open the season. And Jameis Winston, on the last play of the game, just heaved it 60 yards out of the back of the end zone. And so on the last play of the game, Rudolph trots out there and does exactly what I'm expecting to do, throws it out of bounds. And so everybody, of course, the waving song comes on. Everybody thinks the game is won. And then all of a sudden, the refs congregate and they throw the flag. Everybody's just kind of confused, and then they announce for intentional grounding, and it was just real surprised by everybody. Nobody really knew what was going on, and of course we all know what happens next, but just watching that, I'd never really thought anything was going to come of until the lateral happened. And once the lateral happened, I realized we were in trouble. And even I was down in the opposite end zone. So from my vantage point, it looked like Lampkin had the angle on him, was going to be able to catch him in the end zone and stop him outside. And I thought he did, but as soon as all the Central Michigan players rushed the field, I knew the game was over, and I knew what had happened.
And you know what? You've got to give the referees some credit. They owned up to their mistake, and they're going to have to pay for it. I would be calling for their job at this point. You cannot blow a game that bad with two significant teams and not expect worse repercussions than a one-game suspension. I think that's absolutely horrible. Way too soft of a suspension.
Yeah, two games. Mike Holder summed it up best when he said it's incomprehensible that this result cannot be overturned. And the punishment is so light on these referees. But that's a systematic problem. You know, as I've been browsing through all these articles trying to figure out what the next step is, it's become clear that there's really no central governing body for this type of thing, which you think the NCAA would be, but there's so much confusion. Does OSU repeal to the Big 12, to the MAC? Does CMU have to forfeit the game and give the game back? It's clear that there's not enough organization. And if there's nobody willing to step up to the plate, then it's never going to get overturned.
Yeah, but absolutely. And the worst part of it is that Mike Gundy is taking the blame for a lot of this. He's taking the blame for a beautiful play call that's been executed before with no officiating gaffe. But this time, I'm just at a loss for words. I don't understand what the officials were thinking. It can't be Gundy's fault. If you're going to blame the game on anyone, you have to blame it on Adkins and Yurcich. The play calling was not good. They had four runs in the first 19 plays. They get a 6-yard rush on the first play of the game and pass it two more times. They're just not utilizing their whole playbook.
No, they're not. It was just an abysmally called game by Yurcich. He even admitted after the game he was just trying to force the big play through the pass, which is just so frustrating to hear as a fan, because they've been trying to beat the running game into trying to get it to work for the last couple of years, when it obviously hasn't. And then the one game where they're opening up holes and they're running for 5-6 yards a carry, they just abandon it and go to put it all on Mason's shoulders when he's having an off game.
Yeah, and if you can't keep the defense honest, I don't care how good your quarterback is, how great your receivers are. You know, you're going to have an All-American in Washington, and you have McCleskey, who's a speedster on the outside. Even with those guys, if you have no running game, it's easy to defend the pass.
Yeah, it's just there were so many bubble screens, so many short passes. And, you know, McCleskey did score on one of those bubble screens on the outside, but I couldn't tell you how many of those were either incomplete because Mason had a bad throw, or he just tackled for a 1-yard gain or no gain at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, even on before we go over this, Gundy's press conference today, to touch back on that last play call, you know, there's been a lot of people angry about, Gundy making that call and saying, oh, we should have done just what we did in 2011 at Texas A&M. We had Blackman runs at the back of the end zone, and, you know, Gundy's an idiot. Why would he call this play? And really, it's a smart play. It's a no-brainer if you really think about it.
If you know the rules.
If you know the rules. And he says, you know, they've done this, been doing this for 9-10 years, and whenever they did this, you know, they had everybody in the room and they researched it thoroughly, and they knew that the game went in. And so whenever the refs called the flag, he went out there, he was trying to talk to him and said, you know, the game's supposed to end. And, he says he wished that he'd have taken his shirt off and laid on the field to protest, because he would have been more sure. But he just thought to himself, they must have changed the rule. You know, if you're running a big program like OSU is, you know, how are you going to be able to catch any small rule change? So he just figured that they had changed the rule. And so that's why he didn't protest. Or like Brett Bielema said, Brett Bielema chimed in on this. Said he would have just sat on the field and had security pull him off it until the result was rectified and they officially called the game and got it right.
Yeah, it's absolutely horrendous. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, but it was interesting. Also, in his press conference, he said he wouldn't change the throwaway play if we get a chance to do it this season, which is
absolutely
I think it's the right move, because I think this play is guaranteed to be the most safe play in college football, because everybody is going to know the rules for this so well from now on.
Absolutely. And keep in mind, this is the one exception for the rule was the period is not extended if the foul is by the team in possession, and the statement of the penalty includes loss of down. Really, that only happens with an intentional grounding penalty in that sort of situation. It doesn't seem too difficult to understand, but I guess they have a lot of rules to remember. I don't know that I knew the rule before, but it wasn't my job, and they're getting paid for that. So
yeah, whenever that's your job, it's your responsibility to know that you can't be making such a huge error like that. And it's different from any other game. We'll touch on this a little bit later as well. It's different from any other game because here you literally have by rule the game is over. The clock's at zeros. This should be the final score, and the refs give another team. I think it's an unprecedented play, really. I've been looking stuff up this entire weekend researching, and I have never seen another instance of this happening where another team is just gifted another play and they win due to an officiating gaffe because they don't know the rules.
Yeah.
It was not the most devastating loss. That still belongs to 2011 against Iowa State for sure. But the feeling after that game, it was the most surreal game I've ever been a part of. Because, of course, you're just feeling sick after they complete the Hail Mary. But then right after that, I open up Twitter and I see that somebody tweets that Mike Pereira is saying the play should have never happened at all. So then there's the glimmer of hope that they're going to, well, it shouldn't have happened. They're going to do the right thing. They're going to reverse the result. It just boggles my mind.
And it just seems like everything's stacking a bit against the Big 12 so far. All the Big 12 favorites coming into the season have lost a game. OU and TCU losing to Houston and Arkansas, respectively. And then OSU on that officiating gaffe. The only team that looks to be any sort of a threat to go undefeated is Texas. But really, still an unknown at quarterback with Shane Beauchel. I have no idea what to think of them.
No, the Big 12 is in a tough spot right now. OU is going to be playing for their season, essentially, this week against Ohio State. If they lose that, it's over. You're not getting in with two losses. And they're coming off a college football playoff berth, excuse me. They're going to be disappointed with anything but a return to the college football playoff. TCU, it's just a gauntlet to get through the Big 12 undefeated. I don't think any team is going to be able to do it.
Yeah, I agree. There are a lot of hostile environments and too many high-powered offenses week after week. Those defenses are going to be completely gassed by the end of the season.
Yeah. To just wrap up the game, the folks over at Pistols Firing Blog made it. There was a good point, and it's something I've been kind of thinking about. Really, unless OSU needs this for their sixth win to get to a bowl, this game really doesn't affect their season that much. Of course, this is projecting way, way into the future. But if they win out the rest of the season, they go 11-1. The good thing about having a college football playoff committee is that there are people there. They'll be able to analyze and say, well, it says on the record they lost 30-27, but it took place on a play that never should have happened. That should count as a win.
Exactly.
And the good thing about conference play is that every team starts 0-0 in 2 weeks. You go 9 weeks, and if you go 9-0, then you win the conference. Losing to Central Michigan isn't going to change that.
It's a whole new ball game once conference play starts. So moving on to the next big game of the weekend, Arkansas versus TCU. Arkansas was a team that was heavily looked down upon after a 1-point win against Louisiana Tech. Their offensive line was struggling with three new starters, and they came to play in Fort Worth. Austin Allen didn't have a great first half, no offensive touchdowns, but he led the team to the red zone twice. And you have one pick six by middle linebacker Brooks Ellis that really seemed to give the Razorbacks faith and let them go into halftime with the first shutout since the Alamo Bowl. And TCU didn't even have their starting quarterback in the Alamo Bowl, so I can't even imagine when the last time they had a shutout with their starting quarterback was. But Austin Allen goes in the second half with a 96 QBR. He was playing lights out. You could see the determination on that final run of the game in overtime, double overtime. Whenever he scampered into the end zone and the center lifted him and pushed him into the end zone. From the 1 yard line on, he was carried all the way in. Which
yes, that was by the way, to interrupt you, that was just an incredible play. He runs through at least one tackle that should go down. He just keeps, you'd think, you know, the defense would be able to take him down, but he would not be denied. It was an incredible play by the quarterback there. And then of course the rugby scrum got him in. But that takes some determination just to get down there.
And I was feeling great nostalgia during that moment because last year against Ole Miss in triple overtime, Brandon Allen ran in a two-point conversion on the exact same play, who is the older brother of our current quarterback, Austin Allen. But there was a lot of flashbacks going on. Whenever Kenny Hill was at Texas A&M, he staged a fourth quarter comeback, 21 points, ended up beating us in overtime. Again, we play TCU, go in with a fourth quarter lead. He stages a comeback. We go into overtime. I'm thinking, why is this happening again? And we get it into double overtime. I'm like, okay, we're good in overtime. Under Brett Bielema, we're one of the best in overtime. And so I had a little bit more faith once it kept going on. And our defense really, they had a bend, don't break mentality. And that's what you have to have against a high-powered offense like Texas Christian.
Yeah, I do have to admit, I didn't watch most of the first part of this game because I was still sulking from the result earlier in the day. But I did get back to my apartment in time to watch the last couple minutes. And we have to talk about that field goal block. What's the name of the
Dan Skipper? Dan the man. And I'm not going to say that I called it because I didn't think that he was going to do it. But I will say, and I quote, "It's a good thing we have a 6'10", 320-pound man that can get his big, meaty paw up on that ball." And you know what? He did it on the next play. I lost it. My heart was beating 1,000 times a minute. It was incredible.
Of course, Brett Bielema would be the coach to have a 6'10 offensive lineman on his team and to throw him out there during field goal block. But how terrified must that true freshman kicker must have been.
Yeah, true freshman.
And he's got the mountain from Game of Thrones lining up to block the kick. There's no way you can get it over him.
And just as a little fact on the side, that's his sixth all-time blocked field goal. Second in college, sixth all-time. And so this is nothing new to Dan Skipper. If you watch the replay, he's not super surprised. He's excited. But he knew he had a good chance at blocking that field goal. And Razorback fans all over have a newfound faith in the head ball coach. There's nothing he could have done better than go into Fort Worth, a hostile environment, against a very great coach in Gary Patterson and say, "We're here to play. We didn't show up last week in the way that we wanted to, but you know what? We're here to play this week," and that's exactly what he did.
Absolutely. It's really a statement win for the Hogs to go on the road and pick up that victory. And it puts them in a position I don't think they've been in since Bielema has been there. Now they know to pick up a loss earlier in the season, having to fight from behind. Now they're starting up with a statement victory. Now they can go do some damage and really show if they're a true contender or not in the SEC.
Yeah,
who knows, and maybe they'll be the team to usurp Bama this year. Unlikely, but
it's a possibility. They definitely have played them well in the past couple of years, but it might be too early. Alabama is something else. I have not seen a team dominate the way that they did against USC. And against Western Kentucky, a lesser opponent, you expect that a little bit, but that USC game was astounding.
Yeah,
I've never seen dominance on the defensive standpoint like that.
How about Nick Saban after the game? Did you see that quote where he just says, this is the most disappointed, this is the most angry I've ever been after a win before.
Well, Nick Saban knows how to play the press. Any time there's a blowout win, he's able to point out, for example, after the USC-Alabama game, he pointed out multiple flaws in their play calling and in the execution of the plays by the players. He never lets them get complacent.
Oh,
and
yeah. After the first game, he says that we just need to have more winning players. It's like, Nick, you've got five stars backing up five stars. What do you mean you need more winning players?
And, that might be the secret to his success.
Yeah.
He's brewing excellence there.
I'm not really sure what he's playing at, but between the two post-game comments the last 2 weeks, and then just laying into Lane Kiffin at the end of the game with a minute left when the game is put away, and he's just laying into him about some mistake. But they're scary if Nick's that angry about just beating the doors off their first two opponents of the year.
Absolutely. Speaking of top tier teams, you look at Clemson and Georgia. What is going on with the Tigers?
I think if you're in Clemson right now, you better be worried, because this is two consecutive weeks you're not performing very well. First off, the first week against Auburn, you can excuse it. Auburn's an SEC team. They're D1. They've got some talent.
They have some talent, but they have not been good in recent years, and this could be different. But they had a 3-quarterback rotation. There's just no consistency on their team.
Yeah, coming off that game, you could put it off to just a little bit rust from the offseason, but you'd expect them to do better in that first week against Auburn, since they are coming off of a national championship berth. But this week is just inexcusable.
Absolutely.
Nearly losing to the Troy Trojans, just multiple mistakes, letting them stay in the game. They had the play where the punt returner drops the ball before it gets to the end line.
Ray McLeod, what are you thinking? You've seen DeSean Jackson do it a million times on replay. The coaches have coached you every day. You hold on to the ball. That's what's going to make you money one day. You hold on to the ball, and you hand it to the referee. If you don't do that, you're throwing away the ball game. You almost threw away the ball game. It was a 6-point game.
Yeah, if they get that onside kick and Troy goes down and wins, who is going to be pointing the finger? Who is everybody going to be pointing the finger at afterwards? So, yeah, Dabo better be making him walk to every single class with the football in his hand. He better not. He better pick that up when he wakes up, and he better put it down when he goes to sleep. And it better not ever leave his side.
Absolutely. And then you look at the Bulldogs against an FCS opponent, possibly one of the 5 worst teams in recent history, at least in the last 10 years. They went 3-8 last year as an FCS team. You can't expect a top-tier SEC team to come out and lay an egg like they did against Nicholls State.
Yeah, absolutely. They're coming off the big win against North Carolina. You'd think every year we hear that this is Georgia's year. They finally have the talent. They've got Kirby Smart this year.
They've got Jacob Eason, the new 5-star quarterback.
Yeah. I think it's just going to be same old for Georgia. It's just ridiculous. There's absolutely no reason they should still be ranked in the top 10 this week, or they shouldn't be ranked at all, period, after that performance.
They dropped back to 18 in the AP poll, but again, all of the other polls are completely irrelevant. And it's just for the pleasure of the fans to see where they are early on before the College Football Playoff Committee comes in and gives the actual ratings that matter.
Yeah, I agree. And just last point on this, even though both of these teams had poor showings, they didn't play up to their potential, the fact is they still won the game. And that's all that matters. And I think, just going back to the OSU game, I think there are many OSU fans who were clamoring for OSU that we deserve the loss. And I don't agree with that at all. Because even you've got Clemson and Georgia playing horribly to the teams they should be overpowering. Every team has an off week. And there's no reason for not playing to your potential mean that you end up with a 1 in the loss column when you shouldn't have. But hopefully, like we said earlier, hopefully the College Football Playoff, those guys are the committee, they're smart enough not to let a fake result cloud their judgment. If Oklahoma State ends up winning out the rest of the year.
That is the big if. And you never know. We're just talking scenarios here. There's no telling what's going to happen. It's been a crazy year so far. So,
yep. They've got to get past Pitt next week, which is...
That's going to be a tough out.
Oh, boy.
So, we have to talk about the game day game. As underwhelming as it was, Tennessee versus Virginia Tech, 45-24, really wasn't very close, except for in the first quarter. But what I really want to talk about is Bristol Motor Speedway. Why in the world would you play at Bristol Motor Speedway? There were 156,000 people that had a worse view of the game than I did at my house. Why would you pay the money? I don't understand.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't. If you're going to that game, you're not going because you want a good seat. You're going for the atmosphere and the experience. Honestly, I think it would have been cool to be there just for this one time, just be in the largest crowd ever. But, you know, it's ridiculous if you ever do this again. There's no reason ever to play in a venue like this again.
It's all about the money. That's what they want.
Exactly.
And, you know, I guess the one-time experience for a fan is good, but I would not be willing to do that more than once. Maybe not even once.
Absolutely not. This is a nice novel one-time idea, but I won't be tuning in if they do this again. And to talk a little bit more about the game itself, you know, Tennessee wins by a comfortable margin, but I'm still not confident enough to say they're back in pole position to take the SEC East. I've still got a lot of doubts about them after week one and needing a fumble into the end zone to win the game in overtime.
You know, I have to agree with you, but I don't see any standout in the SEC East. You have Florida, who has done an excellent job with the opponents that they've had, but not a whole lot of competition. UMass, the second worst team in FBS, and Kentucky, a lower tier SEC team, but they did beat them very handily. So props to them for that. That was a very good game on their part. Their defense was outstanding, but we still haven't seen them against top tier competition. So we'll have to wait until they start to play some of the heavyweights. Tennessee, they played a good game against Virginia Tech. They really settled in after the first quarter, but it's still hard to see. It's hard to look past that Appalachian State game and say, you know what, they were seconds away from losing to that team. They were one misroll of the fumble away from losing to that team.
Yep, it's the once conference play gets started, it'll show their true colors. As I've been looking at their schedule right now, and they October 8th, they go to Kyle Field, play the Aggies, and then right after that, they get Alabama at home. So if they're legit, we'll find out in those 2 weeks.
Absolutely. And, you know, it wouldn't be a Joe College radio broadcast if we didn't talk about the Holy War. And watching this game may have been the most bizarro universe football I've ever seen. Utah commits six turnovers, and still pulls out the victory. and it does hinge on a two-point conversion failure by BYU. Everyone predicted the run. You know it's going to be a quarterback run. Taysom Hill's done it all year long, all his career. You know it's coming. What do you think about the lack of creativity in that play call?
It's an awful play call. They know it's coming. They know how to stop it. And two, why would you go for two in that scenario? You're not an underdog. You're coming in as equals.
They've had turnovers. It's not like they're playing a good game.
Yeah, if you feel confident in your team, you take the extra point, you take it to overtime. It's pretty, I want to say it's a pretty damning indictment of how the coach feels about the team that he doesn't trust him to go into overtime and get the win.
And, you know, sometimes you play the odds, but that's just not a case where you do. If you're on the road against Alabama, you know what? By all means, you just go for it. It's probably your best chance. You know Alabama's going to score on you in overtime. You just need to go for it. But if you're playing a team comparable to yours,
No reason to try to end the game right there. Just no reason. Not looking good for the Cougars the Cougars Big 12 audition.
No, it's not. And it looks like Houston's audition went very well. I think they could be a very good addition, at least in football, to the Big 12.
God, I hope we do not add them.
They are an up and coming team with a great coach.
That's exactly why I do not want to add them. Let's think about this. They're getting five stars to come to Houston when they're not
a
power five
as a conference
team.
USA.
That's pretty scary to me. You're just going to make it, if OSU or any Big 12 school votes for them to be in, you're just going to make it so much harder on yourself to recruit in that area.
Yeah. I said Conference USA earlier. I meant American Athletic Conference. They have been improving significantly. You have Tulsa, who put up a fight in the first half against Ohio State, and a few pick sixes were the difference, and then Ohio State ran away with it in the end. But you got some good teams in the American
SMU,
Athletic Conference.
SMU kept it close with
SMU,
Baylor.
They played Baylor close, but they had a great second half speech apparently with that 20-point third quarter. I don't know. It's tough to see BYU getting into the Big 12, but I can absolutely see Houston getting in. It will take away from that rich Texas recruiting ground that the Big 12 is trying to claim their stake in.
The Big 12 has made a habit of shooting itself in the foot every chance they get, so I'm guessing they probably will be able to get in. Let's move on. Let's touch on this game real quick. Not really necessary for anything that happened in it, but just for the fact that Florida has now won 30 straight games over the Kentucky Wildcats. 30 straight games.
You know, good for you, Florida. You've beaten a subpar SEC team for 30 years. It's hard. Arkansas hasn't beaten Mississippi State 30 years in a row. You know, Georgia probably wouldn't beat Nicholls State 30 years in a row. So it actually is a good accomplishment. It's the longest active streak. So I really do applaud you. That's impressive.
You've got to think Mark Stoops' tenure at Kentucky may be coming to a close because he's consistently either just missing out on a bowl or barely scraping in. And at some point, you've got to stop saying you're turning the corner as a program and just own up that you're a mediocre coach and you're never taking them farther than they are.
He's a coordinator. He should not have been a head coach. He was great as a coordinator. And there are some coaches that just need to stay that way. Dana Holgorsen, if he had stayed as an offensive coordinator, I mean, who knows what he'd be doing with Oklahoma State's offense and leading them to national championships. Instead, he's leading a good team, but he's not leading them to the national championship. And you have to have that dynamic of, I know I'm a position coach, I know I'm a coordinator, and we know who the head ball coach is, and that's got to be consistent.
Moving on to the next game on the docket, we have UConn versus Navy. I know we were talking earlier, and you said this is possibly the worst clock management you've ever seen, which is quite the statement coming from someone who's so knowledgeable and well-versed in college football.
Yeah, I have never seen worse clock management. And maybe it's not just the clock management, but the desire to win from the Huskies. So UConn lines up on the 1 yard line, 17 seconds to go. They wasted their timeout after their second down and goal failure. And they get tackled at the line of scrimmage with 12 seconds to go. The pile's completely cleared, 12 seconds on the clock. Everyone looks over at the sidelines. The coaches are signaling in, and they just stand there. They make no attempt to get on the ball, no attempt to spike and go for it on fourth down. When you're on the 1 yard line, down by four, you've got to be questioning the motivation of your team. What kind of culture is Bob Diaco?
Yeah, where is the urgency there if you're not going to just get on the ball, do something, do anything?
And if they don't get in, but they run another play, you know what? It's disappointing, but you aren't questioning the leadership of the team. You aren't questioning the drive of the players. And that's really what comes into question here, because I'm at a loss for words. I just don't understand. If I were out on the field, granted I'm not big enough to be on the field, but let's say that I am. I'm playing hard on every snap that I'm on the field. Especially the last snap of the game on the 1 yard line. And that's the difference between 2-0 and 1-1.
As Mike Holder would say, it's incomprehensible. Not good for your Big 12 audition, UConn. Not good at all. So that's wrapping up this weekend's slate. Let's look ahead to next weekend. And, you know, we came into this weekend, didn't have any matchups between any top 25 opponents. That didn't matter. There was still plenty of great football and good action. Next week, we have number one Alabama visiting the Grove, going on over to Oxford, Mississippi. What do you think about this game?
You know, Ole Miss has beaten Alabama 2 years in a row, and Ole Miss is calling for a third. I honestly don't see it, and we say it every year because Alabama always looks better going into this game. I don't know. I really don't know, because Alabama does look better, but you say that every year. And Ole Miss has a dynamic quarterback in Chad Kelly. He's someone that you can't stop. You just have to try and contain him as best you can, but you cannot shut him down. And his receivers, the shortest one has to be 6'2". They have got to have the tallest wide receiving core in the country.
We saw that Mississippi did they played extremely well in the first half against Florida State. It was really dominant, and then they just took their foot off the gas. I don't know if people were not motivated, if Florida State just found out how to dismantle their game plan, but they were just ripped apart in the second half by Florida State.
Jimbo always knows the plan coming out of halftime. He always has a great plan. He's a second half coach, and if they're winning in the first half, you're probably not going to come back and beat him in the second half. He is one of the best coaches in second half adjustments. I haven't seen anything like it.
Yep. So my personal prediction, I think Alabama comes in, rolls. We get another great Nick Saban quote being pissed off about how much his team won and how poorly they played.
Yeah, I agree. I think Alabama's going to win, but you never know. This is going to be a crazy game. Yeah, it's going to be a fun one to watch.
Yes, sir. Moving on, we have Oklahoma playing for their season pretty much, like we said earlier, against Ohio State. Got them at home, but this is going to be a tough matchup. It's hard to see OU coming out on top of this one. It really is.
You know, I've got OU coming out on top. I think Baker Mayfield, Joe Mixon, Samaje Perine, all three of them are going to have huge games. The running game is going to be clicking on all cylinders. Baker Mayfield's going to hit all of his targets, and the defense will play well enough. They're not going to shut out Ohio State by any stretch, but they're going to play well. And Ohio State really hasn't looked motivated in the first half of their two games. So if Oklahoma can jump out to an early lead, it's a matter of holding on, because you know Urban Meyer's going to come back with some good second half adjustments.
Yeah, I'm just not feeling it for OU this week. You know, their defense was really exposed in week one against Houston's offense. And you have better athletes coming at you with Ohio State running pretty much the same exact thing. And I think their secondary was awful against Houston. I think they're just going to be ripped to shreds by Ohio State this week. I see Ohio State winning by at least two touchdowns. OU may keep it close, but I see Ohio State just outscoring them in the end.
All right, we have number 12 Michigan State at number 18 Notre Dame. This will be an interesting matchup. Notre Dame played a very close loss to a Texas team that might be a little better than we think. Miles, what are you thinking about this game?
This is a tough one to call as well. It's Notre Dame playing for their season as well. When you've got a team such as the Fighting Irish, their expectation is to be fighting for a national championship and a college football playoff berth each year. So this is their chance to make a statement and take down Sparty to show the playoff committee that they're legit, they belong in the conversation once again. And at the same time, you have, in this whole offseason, we've had the hype around Ohio State and the Fighting Jim Harbaughs of Michigan, but Michigan State's kind of gone under the radar.
Just like last year. The only difference is they don't have that quarterback experience that they had with Connor Cook. But it's just like last year that nobody had any faith in them. And you know what? They came to play. They made it to the college football playoff. So don't count out the Spartans.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll learn a lot about them. Second to last game here. USC versus number 7 Stanford.
Stanford's going to win by 35.
At least 35.
It's not going to be close. USC could only score 6 on Alabama, gave up 52, and Stanford probably has a better offense than Alabama. So looking at that game, I can't see a reason why USC wins. It's just not going to be a pretty sight. USC is quickly falling from glory.
They've got the players. They're always going to be able to get the talent with their location and the prestige of the program, but they just cannot seem to get a coach in there who knows what he's going to do who's able to manage such a big program. And I think, get out the hot take cannon, but I think Stanford by far has the easiest road to college football playoff out of any team in the country this year.
Oh, by far. Their toughest game might be Notre Dame.
Notre Dame could be a tough one, but looking at the Pac-12, every team is just average, slightly above average. Oregon is not at the levels where they used to be under Chip Kelly. They've regressed a ton under Mark Helfrich. Washington State gave him a fight last year, but Washington State just lost to an FCS school again. Yeah, who is going to take them down? Cal lost to San Diego State this weekend. That they're going to be no matchup for the Cardinal. So I see the trees rolling on into the college football playoff. An easy road for them.
They have an easy road. And the only challenge, it looks like Washington is rated very high in the polls at 8 right now. And there are a lot of questions. I'm not sure the quality of competition has proven anything quite yet. But, I mean, they look like a good team. But still, Stanford is, they're going to roll this year. They'll easily make it to the college football playoff.
All right, and moving on to possibly the most intriguing game of the week, we've got Florida State at Louisville. So this is going to be a big-time matchup. Of course, Florida State, big-time program. They're coming off the week one victory versus Ole Miss. They took care of business last week against Charleston Southern. But this is a big test for Louisville. Of course, they've got Lamar Jackson, a lock for the way-too-early Heisman winner. But it'll be a chance for Louisville to really show whether they can cut it at the top of the game this year.
Louisville has not played very, very good competition yet. They have Syracuse as their best team. So this is going to be a big test. And it's at home, which is going to help them out. But talk about a dynamic quarterback that can do everything. Lamar Jackson is a beast. He had 5 touchdowns, 4 rushing, and 1 passing, 1 interception. So he's a guy that can do anything. He'll do whatever you ask. The coaches love him. But look out for the freshman phenom, DeAndre Francois, quarterback at Florida State. And, of course, you have Dalvin Cook. They have a lot of weapons, but Louisville seems like a motivated team. They want to come in and prove themselves on the big stage.
Yep, I think if they pull the upset here, it's going to be because Jackson just throws them on his back and takes them all the way to victory. And I can also, on the flip side, I can see Louisville just being completely exposed to this game and Florida State running away with it early.
Absolutely. And we saw Louisville's capability in the bowl game last year. Lamar Jackson just went off. I hadn't seen him do it much all year last year, but he seems to be doing it on a consistent basis. Again, not against the best competition, but it is against some FBS teams, which we've seen top-tier FBS teams not even do against FCS teams.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've done all you can do. All they can do is go out and beat the team in front of them, take care of business against a lesser team. Ask Oklahoma State how well they've done with taking care of a lesser opposition so far this year.
It's true.
Moving on to fan questions. At Chris Lurkey asks, I want to hear some national championship predictions and what NCAA athlete would win a chili dog eating competition. Jordan, go ahead and give your take on this.
So as of right now, and it's too early to speculate really, but as of right now I have Alabama is the obvious number one seed just with week one and the demolition of USC and then handily defeating Western Kentucky in the week two game. And second, I have, earlier we said the easiest path to the national championship was Stanford, maybe among Power 5 teams, but you have Houston, who only had OU and Louisville. Those are their two tough tests. And I can see Houston running the table and sneaking into the playoff. I have them, if they get in the playoff, moving on and playing Alabama in the national championship game.
Yeah, for sure. For myself, of course, like you, I have Alabama. They've just been the dominant force so far, and you can't really see anybody upsetting them at the moment. But like I said earlier, Stanford, they've got, doesn't mean they've still got the potential to be upset along the way, but they by far have the easiest path to the college football playoff at this moment. And Chris, the second part of your question, who would win in a chili dog eating competition? I'd have to go just by virtue of the nickname alone and weighing in at 305 pounds, it'd be Darian Sugarloaf Daniels, defensive tackle for Oklahoma State. Sugarloaf would win a hot dog eating or a chili dog eating competition quite easily.
I don't know. That's tough. I have the 6'10", 315-pound mountain man monster, Dan Skipper. Recently engaged, by the way, as of August 22nd, or 26th. My bad.
Moving on to our next question, at Blake Broadhurst asked, for a way too early CFP prediction, a dark horse for the CFP, and is Trevor Knight a Heisman contender? Jordan, I'll let you take this first as well.
So let's just start with the first question. My way too early college football playoff prediction, you have to have Alabama in there. Alabama's, again, just to reiterate, proven their dominance in week one against USC, proven to be consistently dominant in week two. Number two, I have Stanford. And Miles, that's your team. I think they're going to be the second team in the playoff. They have an easy road, and they're a phenomenal team, bringing back their should-have-been Heisman Trophy-winning running back. And then, of course, Houston, my national championship competitor against Alabama. They just have two skilled of skill position players, a quarterback that's a dual threat, which it's hard to defend them well these days. There are too many of them. And, of course, number four, Michigan. Michigan is dominating the subpar competition that they're playing, but they are dominating, and they're showing that they're coming to play no matter who it is. Harbaugh's got the game plan drawn out, and the players are really executing that.
I'll go next. I've got number one, Bama. Got to go. Number two, like you said, Stanford Cardinal. Got the easiest road. And then here's where I differ from you. I did struggle. You put Michigan. Went ahead and put Ohio State in. I was having a tough time deciding between the two, but in the end, Michigan's got to show me this year they can really compete at the highest level before I slot them into a playoff spot. And lastly, I've got Florida State making it into the playoff. Like you saw in the second half against Ole Miss, they were just dominant. Francois, he started off the game rough, but he looked like the real deal there in the second half. He was making some clutch throws, making some big plays. And, of course, we both have the Big 12 missing out on the playoff. You also, who do you have? You have the ACC missing out, so we have...
I do. I think the ACC is going to beat up on each other. You have teams like Louisville, Clemson, and Florida State. Not to mention North Carolina, who could possibly upset one of those teams. So
yeah, I understand that.
A lot of competition. There's not one standout for me in the ACC.
Yeah, I'm not jumping on the Louisville hype train just yet, even though Lamar Jackson, he's a baller, but I've got to see him against a real competition first. And Clemson has just looked too inconsistent, too rusty these first few weeks for me to really put them at the level they were playing at last year. Next up, who's your dark horse for the college football playoff this season?
I have Louisville. They have a chip on their shoulder. There's really not many teams that can compete with them other than those two top-tier teams in the conference. And if they come to play those games, who knows? They might be able to sneak into the playoff. It's a long shot, but they've got a baller. And anytime you've got a player like that, you can make something happen.
Now, I was just talking down on them, but I also have Louisville as my dark horse. I do respect Lamar Jackson. I think they've got a chance to be a great team, especially if he can carry them to greatness. But I think if they're going to have a shot at making the playoff this year, it's because he plays out of his mind every single week, and he'll be lifting up the Heisman Trophy in New York at the end of the year. That's the only way I see them getting in.
No doubt about that. If they're going to make it, he's the Heisman Trophy winner because he's going to have to carry that team. And then, Miles, who do you have? Whenever Blake Broadhurst asks about Trevor Knight, do you think he has the potential to be a Heisman contender?
Blake, I'm disappointed in the last part of this question. This is a pretty preposterous question, to be quite honest. There is no way Trevor Knight is in any way, shape, or form a Heisman contender. No chance.
Trevor Knight is not a Heisman contender. And you just have to look at his first two games to see that. 54.4% completion percentage. Those aren't the numbers of a Heisman Trophy winner. Four touchdowns, two interceptions. That's just no flashy numbers. And he hasn't been playing the toughest competition. He had UCLA, but really other than that, not a whole lot of competition. And UCLA wasn't too good anyways. Their defense was iffy at best. But the biggest key of all is that no player that played for a team that had four more losses before the bowl game has won the Heisman since 1969. Miles, do you know who that player was?
I could not name that.
Steve Owens. played for OU. And A&M plays at Auburn, which, as you saw with Clemson, that's a tough out. That's Jordan-Hare Stadium is a tough place to play. They play teams like Arkansas, Alabama, Ole Miss, Tennessee. And I guess I'll throw LSU in there, but they aren't looking too good right now. But they have to win four out of those six games, not to mention at South Carolina. It's going to be tough. And
In college football these days, to have a chance at the Heisman, you've got to be on an elite team, a team that's won a lot of games. And A&M just hasn't been able – they've been getting the recruits. They've been good on the recruiting trail, but they haven't been able to translate that into elite seasons yet, and I don't think this is the year they turn the corner.
And, you know, most of the credit has to go to the defense for these wins. The defense is far, far improved from last year, and I mean, I have to give credit to them. Trevor Knight has been – he's been stable, but he's been not on par with the Heisman Trophy quality quarterback.
Moving on, we have at SC King, Jim Harbaugh. Do you love him or hate him, Jordan? Are his antics good for college football as a whole?
You know, I'm not his biggest fan, and here's why. You're the coach of Michigan. You have no reason to try and make headlines. You, every time you walk out your front door in the morning to go outside and get the newspaper, you're making headlines. Everyone's looking at your every move. It's not your job to try and make headlines and spar with Nick Saban at Alabama. It just looks like he's slinging mud at Nick Saban. And we saw it earlier this season. He just wants to get headlines. And if I'm a parent of a recruit, I don't necessarily want someone that's being immature, seeking attention like that, teaching my kids the qualities that they need to learn as they're growing up and becoming adults. Miles, what do you think?
Yeah, I'll take a little bit of the opposite stance. I don't love him, but I do kind of like him. I like the swagger he's bringing back to Michigan, and they've been down ever since. Who's that coach? Who's the coach they had in like the mid-2000s? I can't remember
Brady
right
Hoke.
Now, but
Brady Hoke.
No, definitely not Brady Hoke. But they Michigan's really not been on the college football radar at the top of the game for a while, so I think it's kind of necessary for him to get out there. And once he puts on those iron khakis, he'll go after anybody, as we've seen. Even going after the mighty Nick Saban. He's not afraid of anybody.
He's got guts. I mean, you can't deny that fact, but he's just going after people, and that's not a quality I want my kids learning from their mentor, you know?
Yep. Here's our next question, this time coming from an anonymous source. We cannot disclose the name of this listener, but hopefully you're doing all right, and hope we got your back. We're not giving you away.
We wish you the best.
First off, was TCU's fall from the rankings unfair given the game they played against a good team? Jordan, you saw this game. You know a little bit more about it. I'll let you take it first.
You know, if we just took a snapshot of that game, no, it's not fair to kick them out of the top 25. But that's also factoring in preseason polls. And you have a 1-1 team, a team that barely scraped by South Dakota State. Yeah, and I actually think it is fair. Looking at both games now, you see they barely scrape by South Dakota State. They lose to a good Arkansas team, but they lose and they're 1-1. They don't deserve to be in the top 25. There are plenty of other teams that deserve to be there that are undefeated, 2-0. So I don't think it's uncalled for to have that. They did receive votes in the top 25, though, so they aren't being totally disrespected.
So to answer this, Jordan, I'll have to – there's a second part to this question I'll touch on as well. How legitimate do you think the early rankings are? And number one, I think it is unfair they were dropped. You know, it's early in the season. They played Arkansas tough, and they won their first game. But more importantly, the early season rankings are just ridiculous in the first place. There's no good reason to have these. None at all. We don't know anything about the teams. We don't know how good they are. The sport's going to be better off as a whole if we don't have these. What I'm saying is wait until week 4 or 5. You have more comparisons you're able to make between teams, and you can legitimately rank which teams are the best instead of having this faux ranking system beginning, which you base everything off of.
Yeah, it would be okay if we knew the College Football Playoff Committee had no care about those rankings, but that's something we can't determine. And it's best to just eliminate all of those variables that might influence them and let them make their decision.
Yep. Hashtag end early season rankings campaign.
Yeah, start the hashtag.
Starting it right now.
Start the hashtag. Absolutely. So our final question is from Steve K. King. Why do national writers compare the officiating gaffes between OSU and Central Michigan to the Duke-Miami game? Couldn't be more different. Miles, what are your thoughts?
Well, to be fair, it is the closest example we have. But, however, the Duke-Miami game, every single mistake made on that last play was subjective error. And it was one made by referees who didn't correctly interpret what happened on the play. The replay officials blew the knee that was down. There were multiple penalties that should have been called on Miami that were missed. But, of course, horrendous. But at the same time, this is an unprecedented situation with OSU and CMU this week. Here you literally have the game being over, and the refs give the other team a play, and they go on to score. And there's no way you can appeal it. There's nothing you can do. It's just absurd that, you know, the refs break the rule saying the game is over, and then afterwards you can't break another rule that says the game is final when the referee says it's final. It's already final according to the rules. We've already seen the NCAA has no problem going back and stripping teams like Penn State or USC of wins. I don't understand why it's so hard just to do it here. Heck, they've even stripped somebody of a Heisman Trophy before, and you're telling me you can't fix something so blatantly obvious? Come on.
And I see it the same exact way. The only reason that you can compare these two is because it's just a recent example of bad officiating, but in totally different ways, like you said. It would be very easy to say the game was over. I remember watching, I was watching a different game, and I saw on the bottom line, final score, 27-24, Oklahoma State wins. They're highlighted red. And then I look down again the next second, it's 30-27. Central Michigan's highlighted. And so I'm completely thrown for a loop, and I see all of this happen. The game was called. The game was over. There's no reason why they should have restarted the game. And for that reason, there's no reason why they can't reverse the fact that they restarted the game. Other than the fact that they haven't done it before, but what's that to stop you now? When clear logic shows you that you made a mistake and it's easy to nullify that mistake, why not do it?
Yeah, it's just inexcusable, the comedy of errors made in the last minute. And hopefully this lights a fire under OSU this week, and they go hard in practice, and they don't come out slow like they did against Central Michigan. Because if they come out slow like that against Pitt's going to be a rout in Stillwater.
Yeah, don't look past that Pittsburgh team. They're a solid squad. They took it to Penn State.
Yeah, going to be a good game this weekend. Who's Arkansas playing?
Arkansas's got Texas State. They played Ohio very well. Bielema's not going to look past that game. He's going to make sure that the boys are ready for it, and we'll prepare for Texas A&M next week, but there's no way he's looking past this game. This is a solid team, and you don't want to drop one of these right before you go into conference play.
Yep, I think everybody's on high alert after the events of this weekend.
I agree.
But I definitely see the Hogs rolling into conference play at 3-0.
As do I.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the debut of the Geo College Radio podcast. Jordan, it's been a pleasure. Let's get together and do this next week.
Definitely.
All right, have a good one.